In fact, this is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 142D, page 593. We've looked at three types of will, the will which conditions life and provides those great themes of manifestation, working through nations and races. It's kind of, you know, related on our earth to the Manu's department. It's controlled, I think later we will see, by Aries. We've been working recently with the will which brings fulfillment. Some beautiful things are said about this, and this underlies the purpose of all relationship. The end is seen from the beginning, the standing wave of the form-formulating archetype is seen from the beginning and sustained unchanged throughout the end, though the plans to bring it to fruition change all the time. It is the beginning and the end, and maybe holds a key to seeing things in the eternal now, where the past, present, and future are all the same. And now we move into what may be the Capricornian expression, this divine will that we're trying to understand functions as the will which conquers death. What kind of death? In general, death to consciousness. The subjugation of the being consciousness of any individual or of any life so that it cannot express, that is death. So Capricorn is involved, I think, with the will that conquers death. Let's see what he says. This, again, must not be interpreted in terms of death as it affects the form nature. Yes, so we're going to go right to formula number 6, where we're talking about the death of these great conditioning ideas which shape civilization. We're not talking about the death of forms. Forms will fall apart as the great ideas fall apart. So death as it conditions the form nature of manifestation? No. The note of synthesis and triumph, realized and complete, persists behind all that we can recognize as death. The note of synthesis and triumph, realized and complete, persists behind all that we can recognize as death. In other words, the liberation of spirit or life from any kind of customary limitation. I mean, there's always going to be, the universe itself is a huge limitation upon the absolute. It's the absolute infinitely limited. At least, I think so. At least it makes sense to me. But let's just say the customary limitations to which spirit or life is subjected are lifted. And they are destroyed, banished, eliminated. So we'll call it triumph in synthesis. We'll call it that. Because it is only in synthesis that we have the ultimate triumph. When all things come together, not only in perfection of relationship, but in perfect oneness, we have the triumph. And synthesis is that perfect oneness realized. This will is the principle of victory. Well, Mars is exalted in Capricorn. It, at the summit, you know how it is that those who reach the summit, they climb a mountain, and what they feel when they get to the top. I saw this when we were in at Mount Kailash 13 years ago in the Wasak Valley and going around the mountain. When one of our party got to the height of, it wasn't the height of Mount Kailash, but it was the height of the Kora, or the circumambulation of the mountain, he sang a victory song. It was good, too. And that's what he felt at the top. I didn't get to the top. I was riding a yak. And the yak was not going to climb to the top. Okay. I'm very grateful for that white yak, purified bull, of course. On the last day of Taurus, it was something very, very fitting during that Taurus time. I've told that story. The pictures look a lot worse than the feeling I have about riding that yak. Anyway, this will is the principle of victory, of the ultimate goal of life when fruition is achieved. It, you know, it probably corresponds in some respect to samadhi. The peak, reaching the summit, the all of the energies coming to the top of the head and giving a complete, a completed synthetic view. It is the final united success or unified conformity to a long foreseen purpose of spirit matter life form, plus that something which is the dream and goal of the highest initiates in the hierarchy to contact the secret revelation of Shambhala itself. You just have to admit that the Tibetan's words are brilliant. They, you know, what you see here is really the abstract mind fed by the intuition perfectly expressing, you know, he may say, I'm frustrated by the words, but when you see what it took to conceive this kind of abstract thinking, this will is the principle of victory. No more division of any kind. Always there are contending forces, if you're talking about victory or defeat, but there are no more contending forces here. The ultimate goal of life when fruition is achieved, not just the satisfaction of some forms, or even the satisfaction of all forms, but the satisfaction of the life within all forms, which is a synthetic something, or nothing. It is the final united success or unified conformity to a long foreseen purpose of spirit matter. I mean, unified conformity. There is not one form or life or being involved which is not conforming. Not one. And which does not realize itself to be the synthesis. So, you know, what is any form? It's found its own common denominator. That common denominator is the synthesis underlying all, the substance, the synthesis, the being. It's found, so there is conformity to that which it is. Essentially, conformity to that which it essentially is. It is the final united success or unified conformity to a long foreseen purpose of spirit matter, because they must reunite. Spirit matter is a duality which is a oneness of life form, because they're the same thing, as HPB tells us. Plus that something which is the dream and goal of the highest initiates in the hierarchy to contact the secret revelation of Shambhala itself, and Capricorn will have something to do with this. So if we're talking about the highest initiates, in the hierarchy, we're talking 6th and 7th degree initiates, we're saying Capricorn is involved in this perceived synthesis and in the conformity of every aspect of form life to this realized synthesis. More it is not possible to say. If Christ himself is If Christ himself is striving towards that knowledge, it is not possible for us to do more than speculate. And here we find Master DK speculating. I defined it before as this outreach of the abstract mind. I defined it better than I can right now, but seeking the confirmation of the intuition. Speculation is not confirmation. Speculation finds its fulfillment in the confirmation of the intuition. So it's manus buddhi here, and you know, people might say, well, why are you speculating? You know, it's just a waste of, it's just a lot of hot air. But it's reaching towards something which is real. Let's just put it like this, if I can. Speculation is oriented towards the archetype and finds it eventually. If speculation, I'll call it, entrains the intuition. It's like having to get into sync, into rhythm with the intuition. The thoughts approximate. As thoughts approximate intuition, the archetype is realized. As thoughts approximate intuition, the archetype is realized. And that's what we're trying to do. It's, well, I keep on running on here. Speculation as a, Manly Hall has this word, but I'll just use it as a discipline of realization. Manly Hall talked about the disciplines of realization. I'm just saying that reasoned, expansive speculation is a discipline of realization. Reasoned, expansive, deep speculation is a discipline of realization. Realization is found on the atmic plane, and it's found on the fifth level of the atmic plane, and somehow it is a something that lies even beyond the normal intuition found on the Buddhic plane. Realization is the antechamber to perfection, which is found also on the Buddhic plane. In these few words, I have sought to convey an idea of a vast subjective realization. You can feel Master DK reaching out to something here, far beyond our ken. I mean, nobody is stopping in their attempt to apprehend reality. What I'm hinting at in reality is the objective of that endless way of which nirvana itself is but the open door. The atmic plane is the open door to what? The most vast, the vastest subjective realization is that of the universal logos. So, I mean, you know, that's so many trillions of years ahead and so forth for the returning forms. But Master DK seems to be intuiting here some kind of final realization. We can have vast subjective realizations and not even be galactic in our realization. But there's something beyond and beyond and beyond, which is the ultimate realization of the one consciousness of cosmos. And that will belong to all of us, because we are one thing. We're talking about the endless way of which nirvana is but the open door, and I talked about endless, well, relatively endless. It seems endless, you know. There's only one endless way, and if you follow the great breath, because you are the great breath, that's the endless way, but it's also beginningless. What I'm hinting at in reality is the objective of that endless way of which nirvana is but the open door. Always we, human beings, we want to finalize things. We're concrete. We want to say, this is it, this is the end, heaven forever. Okay, but that would be a kind of hell, I'm afraid. Any limited form entertained forever as a content of consciousness would indicate that our consciousness is hell. The way to the higher evolution for which our evolutionary process prepares mankind. And of course, Master DK has only taken that way of the higher evolution so far. into great realizations beyond anything we can imagine, all the way to absolute sonship and to the consciousness and being of a solo logos. But there's also an eighth path and a ninth path, and he only mentions that they exist. What are they? If they correspond to initiations, the eighth and ninth are higher than the seventh, sixth, and so forth, and so maybe these paths are somehow still higher, because now they are possible. And he only hints at them. He simply says they're possible. And do they relate somehow to that for which Atlas and Pleione stand as the eighth and ninth in the configuration of the Pleiades? I am indicating what is the goal of all hierarchical endeavor. Mankind is so preoccupied with the attitude and effort of the hierarchy as regards human welfare and guidance that the goal of the efforts of the masters of the wisdom is naturally overlooked. Yes, we're very, I want to say something stupid, manocentric, you know. Anthropocentric. We are anthropos. We are very anthropocentric. Man or humanity is a measure of all things. And so we forget what the masters are. They are parts of the whole, and naturally, in the great reamalgamation, they are going to be reaching out for something beyond our ken. And we, in a centralized manner, fail to even think about what their interests may be. But DK has asked us, don't we think that there might be something of interest for such as he is and other masters? It is in reality no concern of man, of course, that's true. With Pope, we have to say that the proper study of mankind is man. Nevertheless, the picture of the divine plan so oft emphasized in occult books and by occult teachers is distorted unless it is realized that just as humanity strives towards the hierarchy, so the hierarchy itself strives towards Shambhala. As the old commentary has it, he who sees in the dark light of Shambhala penetrates to that which lies beyond our little sphere, to that which can be sensed behind the Holy Triangle. Well, here is a Holy Triangle, and we're getting some pretty good information on it here, because sometimes we could say Venus, Mars, and the Earth, but Mars is not too holy. We've got two sacred planets and one becoming sacred planet, the Earth, so this is an important hint. Okay. There is to be found the point of radiant fire which shines within the eye of Taurus, which burns upon the mountaintop, and which the water cannot quench, Aquarius. These are the holiest three. Taurus, Capricorn, and Aquarius, they are great illumination and the service resulting therefrom. And the he who sees in the dark light of Shambhala penetrates to that which lies beyond our little sphere, because the Shambhalic perception takes us into the solar system and beyond, to that which can be sensed only by the Holy Triangle. The lords of Venus, Mercury, and Earth sense something there, and is it in Shambhala itself, is to be found the point of radiant fire, or beyond, or what Shambhala admits us to, the point of radiant fire which shines within the eye. So maybe we're talking about the jewel in the lotus here, the bull that carries the fair jewel in its forehead, but maybe a point of radiant fire. Maybe this point is the eye of the bull. Maybe, possibly, Aldebaran, maybe. The point of radiant fire which shines within the eye, which burns upon the mountaintop, and which water cannot quench. These are the holiest three. But, you know, in a way, in a more circumscribed way, we are looking for the central point of the planetary logos. And we do have that in Rule 9. Let the group know there are no other selves. Let the group know there is no color, only light. And, let's see, it's the dark light that takes its place. I'll go there. Okay. Are no other selves. Right, there we go. Let the group know there is no color, only light, and then the darkness take the place of light. That's it. Darkness take the place of light, hiding all difference, blotting out all form. Then, at that point of tension, at the place of tension, at the darkest point, here we go. Let the group see a point of clear, cold fire. That's it. And in the fire, right at its very heart, let the one initiator appear, whose star shone forth when first the door was passed. So that point of clear, cold fire, this is analogous to what we are talking about here. We're seeing a point of fire. There is to be found a point of radiant fire which shines within the eye. Okay, it's a lesser analogy, of course, right on our planet, which burns upon the mountaintop for the initiate on our planet, because he's going to be met by that point of clear cold fire, who is the planetary logos, and which water cannot quench. So these are the extraterrestrial influences, are the extra influences which bring the planetary logos to us, he being a point of clear, cold fire. All right, so this is Rule 9 and page whatever. Twenty-two. Good page. So, a point of clear cold fire. When you see the same phrase, you just have to make the link, you know? Point of clear cold fire, point of radiant fire. There it is. There is to be found a point of radiant fire which shines within the eye, Taurus. And Taurus, remember, has such a close relationship to our planetary logos. We have studied that before, just as it has to Sirius, which burns upon the mountain top. That fire is the fire of initiation, in which the water cannot quench. But the water is used to serve. These are the holiest three. Well, anyway, they certainly have to do, as I said in the beginning, with illumination and the distribution of the light which shines o'er all the earth, which shines on earth across the sea, which is Aquarius. Now, let the group see a point of clear cold fire, and in the fire, right at its very heart, let the one initiator appear, whose star shone forth when first the door was passed. This is what's happening on our earth in response to the greater illumination and initiatory possibilities which occur extra-systemically. When we're talking here about the unfettered light of Shambhala, Taurus and Capricorn, the greatest light, the sublime light, they have to be involved. We saw how high Capricorn can take a person, finally into the light of life itself. As we consider the rays outlined in Tabulation 10, I would have you bear in mind that we are viewing them as expressions, viewing the rays as expressions of the threefold will, and what this means. Whoop, no. I have to find a little bracket there. All right. Right. What does this mean? It means that the Great Bear express the will aspect of the seven rays. The seven rays are also expressed through the Little Bear, I think. And I think they're expressed also through the Pleiades, but not the will aspect. Rather, the love aspect and the intelligence aspect would be found respectively. And if we look at that sevenfold system, which may involve Sirius, we can ask, well, are we in some way a heart center? I mean, we've looked at ourselves as a solar plexus center. Are we in some way a heart center, and is the solar plexus center other? And yet the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, have to do with magnetic energy. But can we say, oh my goodness, there are three, on page 50, there are three constellations above. Well, I'm going to turn there. Certain ideas occur. They only bring greater irresolution, unfortunately. But here they are. The dynamic energy is almost like Sirius, the Great Bear, and the Pleiades. Are these all found in some way within the head? And for some reason, are the seven solar systems part of a chakra which represent the heart? Well, I don't know if that's the case yet. Because the problem here is that it's Mars. Mars has not much to do with the heart, but Mars has everything to do with the solar plexus and even with the sacral center. So we're liable to find our seven solar systems at a lower stage. I think so. How bright a constellation are we really? Well, when we look at it, maybe not terribly bright. Are we brighter than Sirius? Well, maybe Sirius is a part of ours, although up here it seems to be distinct. I've talked about that particular quandary. It's a bit like Venus being within Saturn and yet belonging to Neptune. When we wonder how Venus will be absorbed, it's part of the Saturnian system. We find its planetary scheme there, and yet it's supposed to be absorbed into Neptune. So what's going on? Will it be first absorbed into Saturn and then absorbed into Neptune? It's kind of interesting because there's no direct line here to Neptune. There's a line that passes through, but no direct line, and that's a later type of absorption. So will there be some kind of differentiation in the absorption of these planetary schemes into Saturn, and then a kind of an updrawing from within all the schemes in Saturn to their final resting place? Or maybe, this is speculation, obviously, but Saturn has to be absorbed into one or other of these. And maybe that absorption, maybe Saturn takes into Uranus certain of the planetary schemes, like the Earth, let's say. Maybe Mars and so forth. And maybe liberates the Venus scheme to be absorbed into Neptune. Well, this is solar systemic lore, so there's no way we're going to do anything but suggest speculations. Meaning. So as we consider the seven rays as outlined in tabulation 10, I would have you bear in mind that we are viewing them as expressions of this threefold will. So, right. And I have to put down again what that means. This is the will that conditions life and is related to creation, the will to fulfillment, and the will which conquers death. So from the Great Bear comes the will expression, but we have to consider that perhaps the constellations themselves have relation to the different aspects of the will. We have already seen in one way, well, we haven't seen, we're anticipating it, but Aries will be related to the will that conditions life, Leo to the will to fulfillment, and Capricorn to the will which conquers death. But let's see how he goes on with this. This material is so abstract, I'm getting dizzy. I remember when I used to study 10 or 12 hours a day, insanity at the time, but I had just finished an operatic career, more or less finished, and I was really interested in getting into astrology and esotericism, and I had time to study, so I did study. I studied astrology endlessly until my head started to spin. I should have known something was wrong at that time. It has since stopped spinning, but at the moment, the combination of ongoing attention and hyperventilation is helping spin. We have studied them in some detail in my other books from the angle of consciousness and from the point of view of producing changes and expansions of consciousness in men, man and nations and races. So what have we studied here? The rays and the constellations we have studied. Now, as far as may be possible, we are going to consider these rays as they express pure, the pure living activity of deity as it finds, fulfills itself in manifestation as pure incentive, directed impersonal energy, divine instinct, which latter is a blend of instinctual force and intuitive energy. How much can we stand of these synthetic paragraphs which take the whole world in? Another synthetic paragraph. So we've studied, in the first part of the book, the constellations of the rays, we've studied in esoteric psychology, they enhance consciousness in a certain way. And also in the destiny of the nations, we've understood how they expand the consciousness in nations and races. Now, we're dealing with rays and constellations as pure will. The rays and constellations, as they relate to pure will, RTL, relative, relate, RT, relate, there we go. Now, as far as may be possible, we are going to consider these rays as they express the pure living activity of deity. Living activity, I guess, you know, he's defining will here. Will is being defined in different ways, right? Is it not so? Will is being defined in various ways. Living activity of deity, as it fulfills itself in manifestation, as pure incentive. As it pure incentive is the living activity of deity which moves into manifestation. The living activity of deity aims towards manifestation and has, in doing so, a pure incentive. I'm moving things around, attempting to understand. Directed impersonal energy, that is will. That is will. Divine instinct. Well, maybe all of us emanations are operating out of divine instinct because we don't have the complete intuitive conscious knowledge, which latter is a blend of instinctual force, a greater intelligence driving us unknowingly forward, and intuitive energy. Intuitive instinct, we are told, is the key note of the initiative of the second degree. This intuitive energy relates to the kind of instinct which is divine. The logos, or whatever logos we're talking about, is heading in the right direction due to something innate. So there's something instinctual driven by a higher intelligence, and also the intuitive energy is taking the logos forward. Whatever logos we may be speaking of here, maybe we're speaking of our planetary logos. No. Something much larger. We're speaking of the one about whom not may be said, in whom The zodiacal constellations are as major petals in the major center, in the head, heart of the head center. So now we're going to look at will, pure will, which he defines in different terms. And I want to make this so big I can't forget what it is. These rays, as they express the pure living activity of deity, will and activity allied as it fulfills itself in manifestation as pure incentive. Incentive is the reason why something happens. So we have a reason, a pure reason, why this living activity is fulfilling itself in manifestation. So we have a pure reason or incentive, which is the reason why the living activity is fulfilling itself in manifestation. God has a vision unalloyed, has a pure energy, works with this pure energy, it works itself into manifestation, and, well, maybe this will explain it, or at least it explains it a little bit to me, that God, whatever logos, has a pure incentive or reason for seeking manifestation. You know, what's your incentive for doing that, you ask somebody. Why are you doing that? What's your incentive? Well, if I do that, this will be my reward, that achievement, that reaching is my incentive. Well, God has a pure incentive. God, whatever logos, has a pure incentive, and therefore uses pure living activity of deity to achieve that incentive. And that incentive is achieved through manifestation in a lower world. Well, we're handling a lot of abstractions here, but we're going to be talking about energy from the will aspect. It might be pointed out to those of you who have some measure of occult perception that this synthetic life, being cosmic, emerges from cosmic planes and not systemic, and hence the difficulty of understanding it, and I think seems to me that this life is our local, one about whom naught may be said. There is a... here it is. There is a chart. There it is. This being emerges from cosmic planes and uses the zodiacal constellations as instruments. And according to my calculation, this being is not the highest triangle, but a little green triangle here. Thanks, Keith, for making it green. Little green triangle out of which the Great Bear and many other constellations come as chakras, but emerges from cosmic planes. I've worked long and hard on this. I could be mistaken, but according to scope, if the seven rishis of the Great Bear are as a chakra in a triangle, they come out of a triangle, then what is the life of that triangle? Even though it looks small, it contains the great chakras, of which the rishis of the Great Bear are one, being the seven head centers within the one about whom naught may be said. Why they are on the buddhic plane is a mystery to me. They look to me as if they belong on the atmic plane. But sometimes I think that any chakra which has made itself to one plane has had to be a vortex which also appears in some manner on a higher plane. So because vortexes come from the monadic plane, and what this would mean is if we have vortexes, 35 vortices, or vortices of fire make a master, if we have vortices on the buddhic plane, since the vortices began on the monadic plane, they would have to also appear on the atomic plane, on their way to the Buddhic plane. And below they would make their way. Well, okay. We're getting there. The conditioning will is the synthesis of the life of the cosmic physical plane, of which our seven planes, our seven what kind of planes? Systemic planes are the seven subplanes. Until, therefore, the human consciousness is far more expanded than it is not possible for man to understand the synthetic relation, but this is the will that conditions life and manifestation, right? Something like that. The will which conditions life in manifestation, conditioning the great, the few great creative streams which work out in manifestation on the cosmic physical plane. Well, what he's basically done here, if we find that we are going to relate the conditioning will as the synthesis of life of the cosmic plane, and we find that it's going to relate to Aries, then we're going to find that the synthesis of life upon the cosmic plane will relate to Aries. Of life will relate to Aries. Let's see if it does. Our seven systemic planes are the seven subplanes of the cosmic plane until, but we, well, seventh degree initiates are looking for consciousness upon the logoic plane. So you kind of wonder whether we can understand what's really being said here. You know, the plane of resurrection is an Aries plane. It sets the tone for all of the seven cosmic subplanes here on the cosmic physical plane. So Aries and the seventh degree are united, and the resurrection there, until we become that, have that kind of expanded consciousness, can we even understand what he's talking about here? A little while ago, we talked about talking about states of consciousness towards which the Christ himself is striving. It is amazing that the Tibetan gives us such a big picture, certainly beyond his own capacity to achieve. He's talking about planes that lie beyond planes to which he himself can venture, but he has the mind to do it. The will which brings fulfillment is the divine incentive. Impulse is not the correct term, because impulse suggests lack of control. Impulse suggests lack of control, but not incentive. There is a decision in moving towards that which is for one an incentive. So the will which brings fulfillment is the divine incentive. I just want to ponder on the word incentive. Why are you doing something? It's the why. Incentive is the why which lies at the root of action deliberately undertaken. What is my incentive? What is my reward? What is the reason? What is my objective? What is my vision to be fulfilled? What do I see ahead? See ahead as some type of achievement or acquisition. That's the incentive. So that which brings fulfillment is the divine, the will which brings fulfillment is the divine incentive. It is also that which prods me towards the realization of, towards the acquisition or realization of that which is to be, well, the acquisition, let me just put it simply, the acquisition of that which is visioned as worth acquiring. So it's the force, the prodding force, which impels towards a desirable vision and its attainment. So incentive, maybe, is a it's difficult to know here, because incentive is, you say, what's my incentive? Well, it is that which I see. It's a vision. But then we sometimes say the incentive behind my action, the reason behind my action, and then we think of it as an impelling force. So in my view, the way this word is used, the incentive can push, and the incentive can pull, attract. Push or impel, and can attract. But it is a great energy. So let's see. The will which brings fulfillment is the divine incentive, coming from the cosmic astral plane. Now, what does this say to us? Leo will be connected with the cosmic astral plane. Now, is Leo connected with the astral permanent atom? Maybe. And if it is, that's interesting, isn't it? Because it's connected to the second aspect of divinity, correct? So let's take a look here and say, is Leo... No, I'm not going to ask that question. Leo... astral, permanent, yes, I'll bet it is. Leo is connected with the astral permanent atom, and so its connection with the astral, cosmic astral plane is not without reason. Leo is connected with the astral permanent atom, page 302. So this comes, it's a great desire. That maybe we can say, the incentive is of cosmic astral origin. It is a great desire on that level, which appears to us as will. Because what is a higher desire works out as will for us. Well, some of us, you know, along the secondary line or the second aspect line may feel very connected with this type of will. Is the divine incentive coming from the astral plane? What is this desire that we have that would finally assuage our divine discontent? Perhaps only the fulfillment of the kind of desire which comes from the cosmic astral plane will fulfill the divine discontent. The will which conquers death is an outpouring from the cosmic mental plane. So how interesting that we have here, we have a sequence which is 3-1. We have a sequence which is 3-2-1. Aries, Leo, Capricorn. Capricorn, though an earth sign and much more dense than Aries in a sense, more dense than Leo, is related to the cosmic mental plane. Cosmic mental plane. So Aries, I believe, cosmic physical plane, Leo, related to the systemic permanent atom, which is astral in the human being, in his vehicles, cosmic astral plane, and Capricorn, cosmic mental plane. See how you have to abbreviate those words? It makes sense, doesn't it? Because one uses them, and who wants to be typing out one about whom not may be said, seven solar systems of which ours is one, cosmic astral plane, just abbreviate and get the same effect every time without misspellings if you do it correctly to begin with. All right. From these three cosmic planes embracing the sacred personality of the Logoi, solar and planetary, okay, solar, Agni, don't know what to call the planetary personality, come the united energies of the three constellations which control and energize our solar system. Great Bear, the Pleiades, and Sirius. I would be inclined to think that there would be the Great Bear Aries connection, at least in this context. Sirius, Leo, and Capricorn, and Pleiades, Capricorn. Notice the triangular configuration or shape of Capricorn, giving us the three which relate to the Pleiades. From these three cosmic planes, whatever is a cosmic plane, is it even a state of vibration? Is it prakritic? Are there vibrating atoms or some things on that level? Those are questions. From these three cosmic planes embracing the sacred personality of the Logoi. So, well, it's quite true. You know, if you look at this, according to the map, our solar logos has a causal body on the first subplane of the cosmic mental plane and the lower 18 subplanes, each one of which is a systemic plane to us, are his personality called Agni. When we look at our planetary locus, he has a causal body on the third sublevel, third subplane of the cosmic mental plane, and he also embraces the 18 lower subplanes. What is that being called? I mean, if we name the personality of the solar logos, can we name the personality of the planetary logos? Is it another type of Agni? Agni is so protean. He has so many names. I mean, Agni even rules our systemic mental plane. Agni rules three planes, monadic, atmic, and buddhic, where on solar fire appears. And Agni rules 18 cosmic planes. What would be the name of the personality of our solar logos? Well, we're getting there. Oh, we're almost there. So these work through the medium of the seven rays and in turn express themselves through the 12 constellations which form the great zodiacal wheel. These three work through the medium of the seven rays. They are really 21 potencies, and we still have to wonder whether Sirius is a blind for the little bear. But Sirius itself can be considered in relation to a sevenfold system, but not when you go into the vicinity of the star Sirius. It has to be related to more local stars if it is to be a sevenfold system. So these work, the Great Bear Pleiades and Sirius work through the medium of the seven rays. How so? 1, 2, and 3, or do they work through all seven rays in a particular capacity? The will capacity for the Great Bear, the intelligence capacity for the Pleiades, the love, let us say, capacity for Sirius. These work through the medium of the seven rays, and these in turn express themselves through the 12 constellations which form the great zodiacal wheel. So, you know, I wonder, is it possible that if we went back, and we really have to go back, don't we? Boy, are we going back. If we go back to this, we have one of the stars of the Great Bear operating through will and power. Now, is it possible that for each one of these expressions, the Great Bear will be operative, and through it, one of its stars. That Sirius will be operative, and through it, the first ray star in its system, or the Little Baron. Or that through it, the Pleiades will be operative, and the Ray 1 star here. That's one way of looking at it. Or is it possible that the Great Bear will be somehow connected with rays 1, the whole constellation with rays 1 and rays 7, and particularly transmit its force through those two stars, which would be Benetnash and Al-Kaid. No, Benetnash, Al-Kaid, or Phegda. That Sirius, as a constellation, or the Little Bear, would be connected with transmission through ray 2, 4, and 6, and the Pleiades through ray 3 and 5. Or is it possible that we will have, speculation, is it possible that we will have Benetnash, Alcyone, and who knows what? The star Sirius itself, or some first-ray star in the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, found here, transmitting three different aspects of the will to the first-ray will. Then is it possible, as we go here to Gemini and Virgo and Pisces, that we will have a different star in the Great Bear, Mizar, a different star in the Pleiades? What? Is it going to be Electra? Is it going to be what will be the second-ray star in the... Well, anyway, let me just say, the second-ray star in the Pleiades and the second-ray star in the seven solar systems, the Sirian system, our sun. So maybe, Mizar, and in the Sirian system, our sun may be taking its place, or maybe if we go into the Great Little Bear, we find a secondary star. Anyway, stars 1, 2, and 3, which are related to the second ray. Stars 1, 2, and 3, or a Great Bear, a Sirian, and a Pleiadian star related to the third ray, and so forth. There's various ways that we can conceive of these three coming into this diagram on chart number 10. Yes, perhaps. So now we have to go back quickly. I'm sure we've run out of time. And I'm just kind of keeping going here, I'm afraid. So let's see what's going on. Okay, well, maybe I have to move this, and maybe somehow have to... No, I see. It's this is my problem. I'm in a place where we're dealing with definitions. So I've been here and wondering how it is that the three great constellations will work themselves as constellations into this tabulation 10. All right, so let's see. And, well, I just have to do it. We are reaching that point. And I simply have to say that we are at the point on page 595 where I have to say that this is the end. Amazing. I'm going to start over here. Even though I've discussed the subject, this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 142D. D, page 593. Is that it? 595. Okay, page 595. And beginning of esoteric astrology, 142 E, page 595.